This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. This is show number 494. I just wrote down on the file name.
We're getting so close to 500. Incredibly close for a couple of people who were only going to do 50 shows.
I remember you having to convince me to go to 50.
And then 100, and then you kind of said, no, that's it. And then we just kept on going. So we actually have got to write this book. It's on our book list of things that we're writing.
Yes, but it's quite a long list of things we're writing.
Yes, indeed.
And who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce someone who I have unbelievable admiration for so many levels. And that is David Stewart, who is from Coastlands near to Whakatane. David is a musician, he's a social commentator, and he's an all-round nice guy whose relationships are not defined by people's politics, and I really like that. Welcome, David. It is so nice to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Mara. That is a really cool introduction, and that I think it's perfect. Yes, we all have, I look at it this way. I'm a bit, my politics are a bit different, so I don't want to be just surrounded by people who are just like me, because I wouldn't have anyone to argue with.
Are you going to have lots of people to argue with over the next few years, though?
Hopefully not, because I think over the next few years, we have to put all of our arguments aside and just focus on one job, and that is to derail the government.
They haven't even started yet.
Oh, we have, though. You know, we don't know what the government's going to look like, but we know exactly what it's going to look like. It's going to look like a whole bunch of people who can't agree on anything. And that is our greatest strength, is just how divided they are. And I think one of my observations of the last few years, actually probably the last 30 years, is just how divided the right wing of politics is. And I go probably back to Derek Quigley releasing an alternative economic budget to Muldoon, and getting chucked out by Muldoon, forming the ACT Party. So Bob Jones formed the New Zealand Party to derail National, and it worked, and he broke that party up the day after the 84 election. And it just showed then how divided the right were on how to handle us, the people, how to handle the people.
So how come they got away with a claim of coalition of chaos pointing at the left?
Because they didn't think it through. I don't think they got away with it, Samuel. I think they got away with it until Winston went over the 5%, and then I think they regretted ever mentioning the word coalition of chaos, because it just came back and bit them big time. And you know, we got an imported election campaign from National, They basically brought in the English campaign of a couple of years ago and just, you know, used that as a template and filled in the blanks. And I think their election campaign was terrible. I really do. I don't think they scored any points anywhere along the way. And it just got worse and worse and worse. Unfortunately, this was the election where we all voted for the things we didn't want. And there were more people not wanting to carry on with the Labor government than there were risking whatever else was out there.
Why was that? Why? Clearly there was a feeling for change.
Was there though?
Don't the results show that?
Nothing's changed. I think people didn't want more of a Labor government. I think they'd had enough of a Labor government, and I don't know if they thought much past that. So, in a sense, they wanted a change of the faces of the people running the show, but I don't think anyone actually voted for tax cuts to the wealthy or for less RMA or stuffing up the health and education systems. Or I don't think anyone voted for public service cuts, you know. I think people voted, like I voted on the basis of I didn't want ACT anywhere near the government, so I voted on that basis. And I wasn't really 100% behind Labor's campaign. I thought it was a pretty wishy-washy campaign, but I was going to vote for it because I didn't want the other guys. And I think my friends on the right were voting for that because they didn't want that either. And if you engaged with any of them, their depth of support for National ACT or whatever was pretty shallow. No one was really championing their cause except for the hard outs, you know. But I had a couple of interesting conversations over parties where I was able to flatten any enthusiasm for anyone having a political discussion that might have said David Seymour was a genius, you know. And that was a pretty easy win.
In 2020, Labor won a whole pile of seats that they wouldn't have dreamed of winning. Do you think that that's what derailed them this time, that they then had to protect these seats, these people off to the right, yeah, and that dragged them to the right?
Well, I think Labor's quite comfortable with drifting to the right. You know, they've had a lot of experience at it and they've done it really well. But I think the big mistake for me was they won this historic victory in 2020, and instead of saying we're going to lose a lot of these seats in the next election, no matter what we do, we are never going to be able to defend this, you know. And they tried to, and they spent 3 years. I mean, there was a lot of things going on, but politically, as far as party politics goes, they spent that 3 years trying to hang on to voters who don't actually like them. And people like me who do like them ended up having to defend that. And I was in a position quite often in the last 3 years of defending things I wasn't really enthusiastic about. But without going too deeply into that, I don't have to do that anymore. None of us do. None of us have to defend anything. We're actually really liberated now. You know, the left I'm talking about, and I consider myself a bit left, because I know I'm not right. But we have now got a clean palette to work with. We've actually got a very divided, very fragile coalition of people who hate each other and disagree with each other on pretty much everything. You imagine, I mean, if I wanted to put a bomb under this government, I would get a private member's bill to ban 1080. You know, and I think that would be the most subversive thing you could do to this government, because it would split ACT straight away. Straight away, the Federated Farmers Bloc of ACT would be telling you what a wonderful thing 1080 was, and you can put it on your cornflakes if you want. And the hunters and the gun guys would be going, 1080? Haven't you seen my ute? Can't you read? You know, and there will be straight away this wedge. I think, a private member's bill banning 1080 just for the hell of it. No real reason, no philosophical reason other than it'll wreck ACT.
So we're newly liberated. Let's liberate the first of your music choices. Let's have Billy Bragg. It says here, why this one?
Well, because our biggest enemy is the media. I mean, the way the media served as, you know, the cheerleaders for the National Party and ACT, particularly ACT. I mean, how many times in opposition does the leader of the minor party get equal time to the Prime Minister and the leader of the main opposition party? And David Seymour had as much time on the media as anyone else. And our media, people go, the media is on the side of the National Party, but it goes deeper than that. It's the people who own and control the media, who control the narrative that we get fed on a daily basis. And It Says Here is about that.
Those praying voices on the right of the house are echoed down the street of shame, where politics mixed with bingo and tips in a money and numbers game, where they offer you a future on stockings and suspenders mixed with all the stiffer penalties for sex offenders. Prince is born. It says here, do you ever wish that you were better informed? And it says here, we can only stop the rot with a large dose of law and order and a touch and a short, sharp shock. If this did not reflect your view, you should understand that those who own the papers also own this land, and they'd rather you believed in Coronation Street capers in the warp circulation. It sells newspapers. Could it be an infringement of the freedom of the press to print pictures of women in states of undress? Wake up to the fact that your paper is Tory. Just remember,
There are two sides to every story.
David, it was really interesting to read this article that just made me realise how quickly the wheels will fall off. And that was from their police spokesman saying about how gang members will be required, or anybody who has an offensive facial tattoo, started off being gang members and then it became anyone who has an offensive facial tattoo, will be required to put foundation on it and cover themselves up or they'll be breaking the law. This is the National Party spokesman for police and justice. And he says that this is doable because the Australians have already done it. And then the Australians came back and said, no, that's completely illegal and ridiculous. And no, we haven't done it and no one could do it because that's violating people's rights. And but there's been no retraction from the National Party. And then I remember walking into spaces that are occupied by National Party people and they will look at my muku kawai and be completely offended by it. And I wonder if he's talking about mata ora and muku kawai in this law that he's going to pass that will make us all have to put foundation on to cover ourselves up.
This is what they're getting away with, Mara. They're getting away with just utter crap. And they're just throwing crap on crap. The thing is, with what the National Party campaigned on was the breakdown of our society. They're complaining that people are committing crimes. They're complaining that people are unemployed. They're complaining that, you know, people have facial tattoos and they belong to criminal gangs and all the rest of it. And they're complaining about poverty. That's what they're complaining about. They're complaining about the fact that our society has created an underclass of people who don't even participate in our society anymore. They just work in tandem to it on their own. And they're standing there with this limp argument of, well, we'll just ban it. And I'd like to see them try. I really would. I'd love to see them try. And I think that guy down in Wanganui tried. And I think they took him to court and it got overturned. They tried to ban patches down there. I forget his name, but he was an idiot. And they're coming up with all of this opposition to things they don't like that poor people do, you know, and you know, poor people join gangs. Well, what are you going to do about it? Oh, we're going to ban gangs. Well, then what are they going to do? Oh, we hadn't thought that one out. So just throwing crap on crap, you know.
Gangs are a symptom of a broken society, and that's an intergenerational problem that needs to be addressed. And telling them they have to put foundation on their facial tattoos, well, what exactly is that going to solve in terms of a problem? I just don't get it. It's the first thing he's come out with, and it was utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, is that guy Mitchell?
Yeah.
I think he'd probably be good at, I think he'd be a great baker. You know, I don't know if he was a good cop, but he looks to me like a baker. And that kind of nonsense. And this is the bit that gets me. They're not actually saying they're going to do that. They're just saying it so that people will think they're going to do that. And it just brings people on side with them. And then they won't do it. And they'll go, oh, you know why we couldn't do it? Bloody liberals. It's the bloody liberals, you know. And we get the blame for their stupidity not working.
Yeah.
They got an easy job.
I think when I reflect on the election, I feel really sad that so many people fell for a completely manufactured narrative about the economy not working and about education not working and all these things not working. And yet when you look at the statistics, we're in much better shape than we were 10 years ago in almost every respect. And yet that they put out this narrative that everything was so much worse off, when in actual fact it's not. And I don't understand why we fell for it.
Because it wasn't challenged. And I'm with you on this one, is that they were able to say whatever they liked, and they spent $13.5 million from millionaires who gave them that money to tell that lie. And the one that really nailed it to me, the one that hangs New Zealand's head in shame, was the tax cuts of up to $250 a fortnight. And I heard Luxon say this a couple of times, and then in the debates he said the average family is going to get a tax rebate of $250 a fortnight under National. And I remember thinking at the time, that's not right. But he got away with it. And Hipkins never challenged him on it, probably because he thought, well, that's bullshit, everyone knows that. And the debate chair didn't challenge it. And it wasn't until the CTU looked at it and said, hang on, only, 3,000 people or something are going to get that amount. And Luxon said, yeah, well, it was always up to, 60% off or whatever it was, the Briscoes ad. But the interesting thing here, and I think the punch in the back of the head to the media was, how come you didn't pick that up? That's actually your job. Your job isn't to listen to lies and broadcast them. Your job is to break them down, analyze it, and tell us if they're lying or not. That's your job, and they're not doing it. And we're letting them get away with it.
I've long thought that our media, I used to think that our media's job was to report the news. As a kid growing up, I remember watching the news. It was what we all did. We sat down and we watched the news, and you didn't dare talk. You just sat there and you listened as you get a clip around the ear and sent out of the room. And that was the sacred time in almost every family's life, was news time. And I remember back then having so much regard for those reporters and the truth that they were sharing. But now as a much older person now, at the great age of 52, I look at the media as a money-generating machine, and all it does is it produces information to make more money. I don't believe that it actually exists to produce news or stories anymore. It just exists to produce money. And so what is the media's job then? If all it does is produce money, then what's its actual, where's the value in it? Entertainment for money, that's it. Might as well watch Netflix.
Well, I quite like entertainment. I don't mind being entertained. But the trouble is we've become so dulled to news as entertainment. I mean, people are sad the project is finishing. I mean, why? Mm. There'll be another dumb show to replace it. It won't tell you anything, and it'll treat news as entertainment. So you'll be looked after. You can always go and watch the AM show if you want to, be treated like an idiot. There's heaps of opportunities for that kind of entertainment. But the key to it is that, like anything under capitalism, its role is to make money. There's a debate currently about, the poor landlord class, the only ones who never lost anything during lockdown, and all the rents went up because of the terrible Labor government and all the rest of it. And if there weren't any landlords, where would people live? And it's like, why isn't someone putting in that? When a landlord pulls out of the market, the house doesn't disappear. The house stays there, It could become a rental under someone else's ownership. It could be something else. But the landlord isn't in the business to provide housing for people. He's in the business, or she's in the business, for making money. So their ideology is around that. And it's the same with the media. They're in the business of making money. So they think about what makes the most money. And now that we're making all that money, what's the best way to keep it? So they align themselves with the people the political people who are going to do that. And that becomes the strain of the media. It isn't just entertainment. It's entertainment at the expense of the other side of the argument. And that's the really sinister part about it. I flicked over on election night to TV3, and I don't know if you watched TV3 or saw any of it, but they were having a party. They were celebrating their work. You know, the numbers were going in towards national, and the TV3 faces were just having a party. And I couldn't watch it. I just thought, you know, you're enjoying yourself, and that's cool, but you're just not doing your job. So I went back to TV1 where it wasn't as bad. But as the thing unfolded, I started watching the percentage coming in. I said, you know, we're going to end up with Winston here, and he's going to come into play, and that's going to wreck everything. Mm. And I really think it will.
It's going to be interesting times, that's for sure.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, namahi arahanui kia koutou, koutou aloha. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, so it's so important that we give ourselves and each other all the love, all the care, all the time, all the attention, all the support, all the understanding, all the compassion, all the joy, all the uplifting stories, all of the systems and frameworks of meaning that help us to get through this time of recovery and recalibration. I know for myself, of course, being part of the show is a huge comfort to me and has helped me so much in the last several years to reconceptualize and reframe my daily reality in a way that I hope is helpful for others and has certainly been very helpful for me. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. Thank you. I know that particularly for me at the moment, I'm just really, really enjoying being in a beautiful space of spring and heading towards summer. And of course, for all of us instinctually and on a very deep and ancient and primal level, when we start to see the flowers bloom and the air warm and we smell the sweet nectar in the air and we watch the birds collecting their nesting material and we hear their song and we watch the bees, the butterflies, the birds of course here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, bats, geckos, all of these beautiful life forms carrying out the rites of pollination around us. There's a wonderful connection that we all feel on a deep level to the fertility, the fecundity, the abundance, the power of the living world of which we are a part. And for me, I've decided that it is time for me to start reproducing, which I'm very excited about. And I am preparing myself over the next few months for this process of reproduction. So I'm very excited about that. And my partner Harvey and I are really looking forward to reproducing and putting things in place so that we can do this in the best way. And of course, for all of us, we evoke different aspects to come forward when we interact. And I know for all of us, in many ways, we represent archetypal images, archetypal energies, archetypal beings within us. And I am so grateful for the connections that I feel with everybody in my life and the different aspects of me that they invite to come forward. It's a beautiful, beautiful journey, of course, that we're sharing. And when we can really appreciate those subtle and at times unseen aspects of ourselves that help to guide us, help to find new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling in our lives in response to those who we love around us. It is a wonderful gift. My amazing manager at Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, my heart's home workplace, Amanda Simon, is a great inspiration to me, and she is highly organized, she is highly motivated, she's incredibly intelligent, and she is so brilliant with people. And so at times I think, what would my inner Amanda do? And I really appreciate learning from her and doing my best to invoke the qualities she brings within myself. So I really hope at the moment you're having the opportunity to draw inspiration and a sense of connection and support from those around you, and recognizing the inspiration and the exemplary patterns of behavior and thought and feeling and giving and experiencing that you yourself share with this world. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Dave Stewart.
David, the problems are going to be really obvious going forward, and we can sit here and we can list them. There will be many. But what is the one thing we can do to turn this around? If you had the power to change one thing, what would you do?
Just stop complaining about it. There is in place now, regardless of what the seats and how the power thing turns out, there will be a government in place that will try and make the recovery from COVID not the problem of the super wealthy or the rich. And it will become the problem of the 360,000 people on the minimum wage. And we used to have, under Labor, we had a team of 5 million, you know. And when that team of 5 million fired, it fired really well. What we've now got under National is a team of 360,000. And they are saying, basically, you are going to sit there and you're going to get nothing until the recovery lets you. So if a transport company has higher costs, they can put their costs up. If a landlord has higher costs, they can put their costs up. If an electrician has higher costs, they can put their costs up. If the supermarket has higher costs, they can put their costs up. If you're on the minimum wage, all of these things are affecting your cost of living. You can't do anything about it. ACT are going to freeze the wages for 3 years, and the minimum wage is going to be frozen. Now, that's going to result in people on the minimum wage either being really good about it and saying, fair enough, that's great, or they're going to do something about it. And our job now, the one thing we can all do, is get in behind the team of 360,000. Because along the way of this journey we're on now, under this fragile coalition of chaos, there's going to be little flare-ups where people are going to fight back. The Pack and Save workers are going to say, no, we want our wage increase like we got for the last 6 years. And they're going to go on strike. And our job is to get in behind those people. Everywhere, every single place, be it in the workforce, in a renters groups, whatever resistance comes up against this government, our job is to unite around it as solid as we can and support it, whether it be letters to the editor, or talking to your friends, getting out on a picket line, standing with the banners or whatever, but is to support and drive this wedge. I think the one thing is to be part of that wedge that will split this government and bring the government down and bring it down to a point where it can't come back. Mm-hmm. And I think we, the people, have an opportunity now to actually do what the right did during the last 6 years. When National and that lost in 2017, we never heard the end of it. Every time you turned around, there was another group of academics or of industry people or farmers or ute owners or whatever, complaining and grizzling, and not just complaining and grizzling, but getting out onto the roads and blocking the towns and blocking the motorways and occupying Parliament grounds and controlling the narrative and working to a point of persistence and frustration to attack the government. Well, let's do that. You know,
It worked.
Don't do nothing. It worked. You know, just unite, give solidarity to the people that are fighting the government in every aspect, you know, in every aspect. Support Destiny. You know, they're going to have a go at this government. Support them. Why not? You know, your enemy's enemy is your friend. Support everything that comes up against this government and break it down, and it will collapse.
I remember seeing this meme a while ago. It was two men having a conversation, standing next to a brand new Ferrari, and the boss is saying to his worker, "I know you're on minimum wage now, but you know what? If you just work really, really hard and you do the best that you can and you give everything to this job, then I'll be able to have two Ferraris."
Yeah, and
that's what I feel like. That's where we're going. Like, we're going to this space where, off the back of the minimum wage workers' hard graft, they will need to work longer, harder hours just to make ends meet because the cost of everything continues to go up. But the people who own the businesses that employ people at minimum wage will not have to put in that much more effort to be able to make a lot more money off the backs of people who can least afford it now. And this worries me.
Well, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about the people that support the boss. Just ignore it. Just can't do anything about it. Focus on the people who aren't supporting their boss.
Yeah.
And get behind them. Because the people who are supporting their boss, well, you've got far too much work to do there to get them to a point where they're going to argue with their boss. Find someone that's already arguing with their boss and go and stand on a picket line with them. And put your energies into that. Because what I'm worried about is we're going to spend the next up to three years grizzling and complaining about the media and people putting up with us, when there's actually, and we all know this, out in the community, not everybody's happy about the situation, you know. So we'll find the people that aren't happy about the situation, put our solidarity with them in their fight against the government, and make that fight stronger. Because in order to win this, we don't need a majority.
No, we don't.
We don't need a majority. We just need a win.
Mm.
And a win will encourage other people to have a go, and nothing succeeds like success. You know, and when you get one win, someone else will have a go and have another one, and the government will become under siege, because the job they've got to do for the next up to 3 years is convince us that they're actually on the game. And we all know they're not capable of doing it. They are just not capable. They can't deliver their promises. They can't deliver their tax cuts. And they can't do it, any of that, without attacking public services. And those are going to, that's where the fight's going to end up, is in the public services. So, you know, I'm not saying tie ho and wait till it happens, but just wait till it does happen, and don't rely on the media to report it fairly. We need to get involved. We need to become more active. You know, we talked about this last time we talked. Samuel asked me if I was going to become an activist again, and I had said something like, I expected I didn't have to. Well, someone else was going to do it, and we're all thinking that. We'll think someone else is going to do it, but it's actually us, and we'll be able to do this. I have every confidence that this government is going to crash and burn. It can't not. No, for let's look at New Zealand first. They always throw up at least one flake. You know, there's always at least one who thought, a Jamie Lee Ross, thought he could have been the boss, you know, and then I mean, God, who's in there? You know, we don't know yet, but one thing we do know is there'll be a flake in there. So let's find them.
Let's take the second of your music choices. We're having Billy Bragg again. King Tide and the Sunny Day Flood. Why this one?
Climate change. In Florida, this is a song about Florida where they have flooding there now caused by water expanding in heat. So the water expands and it comes up through the ground and it floods their houses and it's just a part of their life. And this is all related to climate change. And there's something that has to be done. It's our biggest crisis, you know, like, and it's a global thing. The whole world is joined by water.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could save the world and all simply by collecting up tin cans and empty bottles? We all want to believe it's true, but it don't matter what you do, so long as we continue to burn our way through fossils. Now it should come as no surprise to learn about the ocean's rise. Polar caps are melting with every year that the planet warms. Now people have to understand, we're gonna feel it far inland. It's gonna shift the seasons and supercharge the storms. King tide is a-coming, king tide is a-coming, king tide is a-coming, bringing flooding on a sunny day. King tide is a-coming, can't you hear the meltwaters running? King tide is a-coming, gonna sweep everything away. And you know, the oceans, they connect us all. No one can just build a wall. We have to work together. We can't do this on our own. To think that you can stand aside is nothing more than foolish pride. Cause everyone's a libertarian till the brown water floods their home. You may live on higher ground, feeling like you're safe and sound, thinking as you look around, this is your lucky day. But everyone beneath the sky soon be looking for somewhere high and dry. Nothing you can ever do will keep them all at bay, because the king tide is a-coming. King tide is a-coming, the king tide is a-coming, bringing flooding on a sunny day. King tide is a-coming, can't you hear the meltwaters running? The king tide is a-coming, gonna sweep everything away. The king tide is a-coming, you have to act today.
David, it's been really interesting watching locally the letters to the editor, and I was really quite taken aback by one the other day, and I know who the author was, and I know that you were the subject of it, and he was talking about your approach. I mean, you guys are politically poles apart, but rather than that being a thing that created a disrespectful situation, the exact opposite happened. You shook his hand and were kind to him, and all the things I know about you, your manaakitanga, your kindness, your respect for people, but it still caught him by surprise. And I was surprised by that because I think, crikey, if that is that really what we expect now? We expect just because our politics are different, we can't be respectful to one another. It was awesome to see the letter, but also sad at the same time that it was necessary. And so I just wondered, how did you feel about all of that?
Well, I heard he was going to write a letter. Our mutual friend told me he was going to write a letter, and I went back to the conversations we'd had. I was thinking he was going to have another go at me or something. But my approach to all of this, to my relationships and my conversations with people, is that I actually really want to engage with people who disagree with me. It's really important that we do engage with each other, because it's really easy just to have an echo chamber and just sit in our little groups and nod our heads and drink our cups of tea and condemn people as the enemy. But I don't see that guy as the enemy. His ideology is wrong, but I can combat that if I can have a chance to have a conversation with him, I think. And people are so used to confrontation, but it doesn't have to be confrontational, you know? And I love it when he was introduced. I thought, oh, can I, you know, I'm the guy there. And he didn't know how to react. I think he thought I was going to bite his head off. I do advocate strongly and vigorously. But I've usually got a smile on my face, you know? And I think you can get away with a lot with a smile on your face. But there's been, you know, there's that guy, and there's other people that I meet in my social circle who go, I saw your letter to the editor, I didn't agree with it. And I love that, you know, go ahead, you know, I'll tell you what I think. But I think it's really important that we identify who the enemy is. And the enemy isn't people who disagree with us. It's the people who are telling them to disagree with us. And we actually need those people, because they're going to come through the next up to 3 years with a whole lot of disillusionment, you know, because all of the things that they thought they were going to get, you know, they're going to be in our position, Mara. They're going to be wondering why we had a solid Labor majority and didn't legalize cannabis. Yeah. You know, they're going to be in that position. So eventually, they're going to come round to our point of view. I remember the last time we talked, Samuel, I said people are never wrong. They just make mistakes. And that guy, Matt, he's not wrong. He's mistaken. And that's the key thing, is when people make mistakes, you can be their friend and you can help them. You know, and it's not being patronizing or anything. I probably think it was the way I just put it. But, you know, there's an old saying of the union movement, unite with and struggle against. And if you have got the right approach to this stuff, you can talk to anyone about it, you know. And if it starts getting too much, you can back off. But really, if you keep your cool and you stay in control of yourself, you'll stay in control of the situation. And that's what I did to that guy, Matt. I was in control of the situation. He was completely disarmed. You know, yeah. And we had a great evening, you know, and we talked about things, we didn't agree on anything, except we were both wrong.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Each other's eyes.
That's fine. We can both be wrong.
Yeah. Okay, that's a much better position than everybody's right, I think, in a sense, because it allows for expressing kindness instead of competition.
Yeah. There's that old song, Stephen Stills, something happening here, you know, nobody's right when everybody's wrong, you know. Yeah. And, you know, and we can all be wrong, you know, or should I say mistaken, you know.
That is a great song. Actually, one of Jack's most favourite songs. He sings that song all the time and makes me very proud to have a 13-year-old who knows the classics and sings them well. He says it's his karaoke song. We just need to go somewhere karaoke where he can sing it.
It's one of my open mic staples, because everyone knows it and everyone loves it. And it's also a really rebellious song.
It is. And actually very fitting for the moment, I think. We should close with that one today, Sam.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Okay.
For what it's worth.
Let's squeeze in at least some of the questions to end the show.
Yeah.
Dave, what's the biggest success you've had in the last year or so?
I've become a professional musician. I've become a pensioner. Same thing. I get paid like nearly $400 a week as a superannuitant. And it's just every second Tuesday, ping, comes money in my bank account from the government. And they go, Dave, keep fighting us. And then the next fortnight, they go, are you still here? Here's some more money. And I've earned this after 51 years working. You know, so it's the best thing. I've become a professional musician.
What's the biggest challenge you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Getting behind the team of 360,000. I think that's a challenge that I've got. And I'll give that challenge out to everyone listening. Get behind the team of 360,000 and fight, join their fight wherever it pops up.
And that was good advice, but here's opportunity for some more. Do you have any advice for our listeners?
Well, if you like the situation, you know, and Mauro said, you know, some people are fine with it. If you like the situation, just keep your mouth shut and let us who don't like it get on with fixing it. Because we're going to have to. This isn't something that we really have any control over. This is social upheaval. This is social discord. And we just understand it, that's all. We just know what it is and we get in behind it and support it. We're not making it. We're just commentating on it. So if you're not with us on this one, just get to the side and don't get in our way, because we've actually got a job to do, and it's to make the social thing work properly. And everyone wins from it. You know, the guy who doesn't want a pay increase because he's happy with his boss will still take it when it comes.
Thank you for that. Mawira.
David, thank you for being a truth talker, a straight talker, and a champion for the most vulnerable people in our community. Thank you for making the world a more beautiful place with your music and with your kindness and your respect for everyone around you. You are a thoroughly, thoroughly good human being, and it is my absolute privilege to know you. Kia ora.
Well, very humbled by that. Thanks, Mawira.
Thank you.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs.
mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. And this is Buffalo Springfield. What it's worth. I'm Zoraya in Soares Bay, with Mawera Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined from Coastlands by Dave Stewart. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mati wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.